to Follow the Money with your hosts, Mitch Moss and Polly Howard.
Welcome into the program. It is Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Jonathan Von Tobel here on a Friday morning live in downtown Las Vegas. Circa Sportsbook at the Resort and Casino is your spot. In about 5 minutes, we'll try to make you some money betting player props in the NBA tonight and maybe some K-props in baseball as well, as Doug Carlstein is going to join the program. JVT, after last night's action and the Bucks win, now we're tied at three apiece there. We have a seventh game. Here are your updated NBA Finals numbers to win the championship. The Nets are plus 230. Suns are plus 250. Bucks 450. Jazz 650. Clip joint 8-1. Sixers 11. Hawks 20. Are you surprised that the Jazz at 650 are that much ahead of the Clippers at 8-1?
I am, only because, like, one, the Clippers are now favored in the series, right? So, like, something doesn't jive there. So the odds are telling you that they're more than likely going to win this series.
They're like $1.70 almost.
Yeah, they're right. So that's a little weird, just given everything. And, look, future odds reflect liability, and so maybe there's something there with that, because the Clippers aren't exactly a very popular team at the window. But, no, that does really surprise me, just given the fact that they have the lead that they do. They are back home to close this thing out. But it's interesting, right, is they're favored to win the series. They're underdogs in the game, though. They're going to be underdogs in Game 7 if Kawhi Leonard doesn't come back. Yeah, I'm pretty fascinated by the dynamic of what you're looking at with these prices. But the Jazz seem a little higher to me, considering everything that the Clippers have done to them.
What did you make the Game 6 number tonight? Jazz at Clippers.
So take this as a grain of salt. I've been very high on the Clippers.
Yeah.
But I also think that we're ignoring, like, matchup analysis when it comes to some of these games.
Yeah, you have a good breakdown on this coming up a little bit later on.
And just given what the Clippers have done, everything the Clippers did, we'll put it simply, is everything the Clippers did in games 3, 4, and 5 were replicable without Kawhi Leonard, because a lot of it was game plan and personnel. And so you saw that again in game 5 where they did it to Utah. And so, like, I am surprised. I think the Clippers should probably be a slight favorite, like a 1-point favorite or so at home against Utah. Because remember, too, this is the other factor about this. They're full capacity now.
Yeah.
So this is not like 20, whatever it was with a lot of cardboard fans. This is a full house at Staples, and who knows what the support's going to be like, but generally it's going to be more in favor of the Los Angeles Clippers.
See, I thought the number was going to be pick. I thought pick was a totally fair number.
Yeah.
And then Jazz opened up 2, and now you see it at DraftKings anyway. They're down to 1.5. The Jazz are.
A lot of spots at 1.
Yeah. Yeah. So it has moved a little bit, so they agree with that anyway. I thought it was going to be a pick 'em. But the Game 5 number got so far out of whack. For the Jazz to get to 8.5.
I bet it at 7.5. I got to 8. I bet it at 8. When it got to 8.5, I was like, I can't do this a third time. We talk about overreactions a lot. That's an overreaction. A 13.5 point swing from the closing number of Game 4 to the closing number of Game 5.
That is absolutely massive.
That's insane.
It really is.
And yeah. I get it. You change the venue. But, like, even from a simple math standpoint, it just didn't make sense. Home court's been worth 2.5 in this postseason. At the most, that's a pick in Utah with Kawhi Leonard.
Sure.
So Kawhi Leonard's worth 8.5 points to a point spread?
No, come on. There's no way. He could be worth 5.
Yeah.
But 8.5? It's a huge number, JVT.
Very disrespectful to my boy, PG.
What was the other one? It's a big number on the 76ers right now to win it all, too. What did I say? 11-1?
Yep.
Prop bets coming up with Doug Carlstein here on VSiN.
This is Brent Musburger, and here is your VSiN Action Update. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
Russell Henley, the clubhouse leader at the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, after play suspended due to darkness. Henley, 4 under par, 67, he's 33-1. Louis Oosthuizen threw 16 of his first round at 4 under as well. He's plus 750. John Rahm, Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, all at 2 under par. Rahm plus 550, Koepka plus 750, Schauffele is 10-1. A pair of Game 6s in the NBA playoffs today. Philadelphia looking to force a Game 7 as a 3-point road favorite at Atlanta, 221.5 the total. The Utah Jazz, a 1.5-point favorite at the LA Clippers, 219 at Staples Center. Be sure to check out our new betting splits feature on VSiN.com before you place your next bet. Every day, we're posting the latest splits for games, the current odds, and what percentage of bets and money being placed on each game. Go to VSiN.com and check out the betting splits, plus live odds, line moves, and game analysis. Make VSiN.com the best place to visit before your next bet. With your action update, I'm Mike Sena.
Get the latest VSiN odds at VSIN.com. And remember, cashing tickets is what it's all about.
update your sports betting wardrobe this summer with some new VSiN gear. We're talking hats, shirts, mugs with the VSiN logo, or fun sports betting sayings like cashing tickets is what it's all about. And it's not under until it's over. Visit the VSiN store today at vsin.com/store and find the perfect item for yourself or as a gift. That's vsin.com/store. Mitch Moss, JVT with you here on a Friday morning. Let's talk some player props right now in the NBA and Major League Baseball. Doug Kralstein joins the program. Follow him on Twitter. He is at PropBetGuy. Doug, good morning. How are you today?
Doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Before we get into what you might like today in baseball, like, what's it been like for you the last, you know, week to 10 days in this sport with, we find out, you know, baseball kind of sends out that memo, we're going to start cracking down, no more illegal substances. Have you found yourself maybe dialing it back a little bit because you just want to figure more stuff out and you want to see how players are going to approach this? What has been your, like, plan of attack here now in baseball with K-Props?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, in a year of some crazy variables we've had to deal with, this is just kind of tacking another onto the list, tacking, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, short of actually knowing who's using the sticky stuff, which I don't, I do dial it back for some guys. You know, what I'm looking at specifically that's a little different is I'll look at spin rates, which I always look at, but I think I'm avoiding, what I'm doing lately is I'm avoiding the elite guys, the guys who, you know, are kind of honing their craft and basing it on their spin rate. Any guys who've had inconsistencies in their spin rate over the last few starts, or even over the last few years, if they've had a spike in spin rate at some point, it's all guesswork on my part. I don't know, you know, which pitchers are potentially going to fall off a cliff in terms of their performance because they can't use the same stuff that they've been using. So I am dialing it back in that sense, but there are some guys I do feel are safe, guys who have had consistent performances throughout the years. Their spin rate doesn't really vary from start to start either.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of a couple of guys who would fit that profile of, you know, being consistent over a couple of years?
Yeah. You know, so I'm not trying to accuse anyone, but guys like Jarrett Cole, Trevor Bauer, who've seen their spin rate rise over their career.
No doubt.
You know, obviously are two of the elite guys. A guy like Glasnow, I was worried about. He actually looked good until he injured himself. You know, hard. It's not necessarily just the hard throwers, but it's guys who have maybe a little bit more pop on their fastballs. You know, maybe the velocity isn't there, but the spin rate is. I do think it's actually going to be a few more relievers than it is going to be starters, which won't really affect K-Prop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting as we get into the summer with the higher temperatures and day games, perspiration, it's going to be even harder to grip the baseball. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it evolves over time. But for now, I'm kind of all systems go with maybe just a few guys I'm staying away from.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Let me throw this at you. I, you know, listening to Glasnow the other day, and he went off on that, whatever it was, 4 or 5, 6 minute rant, and I thought it was really great. And he took us kind of behind the curtain to a lot of stuff. Like, maybe he's accurate, right? Where if you take away the sticky stuff, all of a sudden guys are using muscles they never had before, and we're going to have more injuries, meaning they could get yanked in games. Like, so, I know somebody reached out to me the other day and said, boy, bad beat with DeGrom. I had the over 8.5 Ks. He had 8 through 3 innings. But I was like, you might want to be careful. Like with what you just said, some of the elite guys, including DeGrom, he's had a couple of injuries now already this year. He's missed a few starts. Like, betting DeGrom K-props, while if he stays healthy, Christ, he could strike out 15 any given night. But is he going to make it 6, 7 innings? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a guy. I did get burned on one of his starts earlier this year. I think it was versus the Diamondbacks. He had 8 strikeouts through 5 or 6 innings and came out after 70-some-odd pitches, and the over was 8.5. You know, he's been an injury risk, but, you got to agree with what Glasnow said. You know, pitchers are the most routine – it's the most routine position in probably all of sports in terms of how they, you know, hone in their craft,
yep,
what they do in between starts, how they have to follow the exact same mechanics. To change anything on the fly in the middle of a season, it does seem a little unjust.
Doug, you know, I'm curious, like, because I always like tracking the market, right, and how they react to certain things, whether it's sides, totals, or prop markets like this. So, like, a two-part question. One, has the market changed at all since this whole story came down with cracking down on pitchers? and just how the market has evolved as a whole since K-props have become more more popular?
Yeah, no, another good question. I haven't seen too many specific instances of changes in the market or changes in lines that I would expect for some pitchers. Jared Cole's line was 7.5 versus the Blue Jays the other day. I think he only finished with maybe 4 or 5 strikeouts, mm-hmm. so that the under actually hit. 7.5 was a low number for him. He had been a guy who'd been consistently at 8.5, 9.5, and the Blue Jays are a good lineup, but you know, when Cole's dealing, he's a double-digit strikeout guy, so he's a guy whose line's a little lower. I'm interested. Bauer's pitching today. I haven't seen a line on him. Kind of interested to see where that one lands to. So, you know, I think some of these elite guys, you might not see the 9.5 lines, which were crazy high just to start the season. I think they might come down to earth a little bit, you know, as we feel it all out and see how these guys perform with the new guidelines.
Well said. Follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Doug Kralstein's our guest. Follow him on Twitter. He is at PropBetGuy. So with that said, who are you focusing on? I know, again, it's early whenever you pop on here, so some of these numbers might not be available everywhere, but who do you have locked in today? Who do you like in baseball today for a K-prop?
Yeah, so Alex Cobb, Angels pitcher, he's, for what it's worth, he's a low spin rate guy, so he's not a guy who's relying on the spin to begin with. I like him at over 5.5 strikeouts today. Playing the Tigers, fading the Tigers has just been a cash cow this year. They have the highest strikeout rate. They're not a great team. 8th lowest batting average. Cobb's been a little up and down, but he's hit this in 5 of 9. He's hit it in 5 of 6 starts. He's lasted 5 innings. Being that it's the Tigers, it's at home, I do like Cobb to get that length today. His underlying numbers have been a little better than his raw numbers, so he looks like he's in for some positive regression. And 5.5 strikeouts versus the Tigers, it's just a soft line for a guy who's actually a good high strikeout pitcher.
Okay, very good. So Alex Cobb over 5.5 tonight for the Angels going in that game. Let's shift to basketball tonight, what we have in the playoffs. And you can take this in any direction. In the Sixers-Hawks game, if you see something on a point prop, a rebound prop, double-double, threes, triple-double, any of that stuff, who do you like as of right now?
Yeah, so it's kind of a dream scenario tonight because you got two teams that I think on paper people would argue are better. You know, the Sixers are better than the Hawks, and the Jazz are better than the Clippers, especially without Kawhi. So these teams, I know they're on the road, but highly motivated, must-win game. For the Sixers, Joel Embiid, a little chalky, but I do like him to go over 12.5 rebounds. He's hit this in 3 of 5 games this series. He's averaging almost 23 rebound chances, meaning he's, you know, tracking his stats. He's around the basket for at least 23 chances per game this series. He's converted that, you know, converted those chances 60% of the time. And look, the last two games, the Sixers are with him on the court plus 11. Without him on the court, they're minus 17 in only 20 minutes. So I know he's the big guy. He's a little hobbled. I think Doc Rivers gets him on the court as much as possible. So I expect a few extra minutes out of him today, especially if the game's close coming down the line. So I like Embiid over 12.5 rebounds.
Doug, have you been following the Seth Curry point totals? Because one of the things that I've noticed from a matchup perspective, Seth Curry, they've been trying to hide Trae Young on Seth, and it just has not been working.
Yeah, it really hasn't. I mean, Seth, you know, look, Tobias, I think, only had 4 points last game. Ben Simmons only shot the ball 3 times, and he missed all those free throws. Seth Curry has looked like Embiid's Robin, you know, the Robin to Embiid's Batman. I got to think the Hawks are going to change a little bit defensively tonight. I think Young probably shifts to that fifth guy, whether it's Korkmaz or Thybulle, who usually just kind of hide in the corner for the kickout. I got to think Bogdanovich gets a little more Seth Curry time tonight. But, I mean, look, the Hawks haven't adjusted yet. It's been working for them. They're up 3-2. I believe Seth Curry's point total has jumped a little bit after mm-hmm. last game. I think it's at 15.5.
Yep.
So I'm personally not loving it at that level, especially because he's so reliant on a little bit lower volume typically. But we'll see. He's been fantastic this series so far.
Doug, you know, going back to Game 5, looking at the other series that we have tonight, the Clippers against the Jazz, I think some people were automatically betting overs on players like Marcus Morris and also Paul George and others on the Clippers because they're, you know, the best player on the team, Kawhi Leonard, was not playing. He's out again tonight for mm-hmm. Game 6. So how are you looking at player props for, you know, guys on the Clippers like a Paul George, like a Morris, maybe some others?
Yeah, so I hit on Morris last game. He was at 14.5. It opened this game at 17.5, which I think is a pretty fair line. I think that's kind of market value. So I'm not loving that tonight. Reggie Jackson's also at 17.5. That's a little bit too high. It's a little bit too high for me, but not to the point where I would actually play the under. To be honest, in terms of the Clippers, I think Paul George's line, which opened at 30.5, is a little light, especially for a home game. He looked fantastic. It's not like he was making some tough shots, but the Jazz also just did not look like they were equipped to guard him. He was getting to the basket. He was taking it right at Gobert. For the Clippers, I haven't played him yet, but in terms of the lines that I saw, he's the one who actually stands out the most, which is a little surprising given that, you know, he's the one I would have expected the books to jack up his points line a little bit more than they did.
Yeah, sure. Plus, I think you got to like his comments where he said, I basically have to go back to the Paul George I was in Indiana now that we don't have Kawhi. So, meaning like the usage rate, the shot attempts, it's all going to be there for him. So,
look at his last four games. Like his last four games, 31.5 points per game on 48% shooting, 42% from three.
Yeah.
He's been incredible, Paul George.
Yep.
Exactly. And I haven't even looked at the usage numbers late for last game, but I got to think that the ball's in his hands for plenty of the game.
Follow him on Twitter. He's at PropBetGuy. He's a contributor for Pickwise. It's Doug Kralstein here on the program. Doug, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
There you go. Yeah, Pickwise is where he does a lot of his betting analysis at as well. Doug, very good on the props. And again, the two that he likes, Joel Embiid, over rebounds, 12.5, and also Alex Cobb in baseball, where his strikeout prop tonight is 5.5 JVT. You're an Angels guy. What do you think?
I like it. Look, and he mentioned one of the more important parts. The Tigers, I mean, first or last, however you want to describe it, they were strikeout rate in Major League Baseball as a team. I think it's like 27%, something in that range. So, no, I would totally agree with that. And they were whiffing a little bit yesterday. Man, Ohtani's great. I would totally agree with that.
I'm going back right now. I'm looking at some of Paul George's games that he had when he was with Indiana in the playoffs.
Yeah.
See here, there was a series against the Hawks where he averaged, that went seven games. He averaged 24 points in that series. The next series was a long one against Washington. He averaged 19.7 in that series. The next series was against Miami. That went six games. He averaged 24 points. So that was 1 year. Was that around the time? I think he might have been hurt the next year. But that year was 2013-2014. So he wasn't exactly, you know, setting the world on fire with his games. Let's see.
He's also pretty young, too, right? I mean, when you're looking at, like, the depth, I think, what's that, 2013-2014 is his fourth year in the NBA at that point?
Yep.
And, like, from 2012 to 2016, like, we're talking about him averaging 21.9 points, 37% shooting, and 43% from the floor in the postseason, right? Like, he was pretty decent.
Sure.
Postseason player for the Indiana Pacers.
This is the 2015-2016 in a seven-game set against Toronto. He averaged 27.3 points per game in that series.
Yep.
Shot 94% from the line, 44% from three, 45% from the field overall. He played in 39 minutes per game, but his points were 33, 28, 25, 19, 39, 21, and 26 to get to that average. Also, his rebounds were really good, averaged almost eight and about 4.3 assists. And again, that's when he said that, it's like, okay, he wants to try to get back to that mentality of where he had the ball in his hands a lot for those Pacers teams. And it's probably going to have to happen again if they're going to, you know, want to take care of the Jazz here tonight in Game 6 and then moving forward, obviously, against the Suns.
Well, and one of the things, and it ties into the coaching thing, right? One of the things that Chauncey Billups has gotten a lot of credit for in terms of the evolution of Paul George this year, Paul George has been playing a lot of more point guard, right? Reggie Jackson's been incredible in the series, but he's been a two-guard point. It's been point Paul for the most part. And he has been running the offense for them, and Billups gets a lot of credit for the way that he has developed in that position. It's why Billups, by the way, is getting a lot of, you know, traction behind being a head coach. But I think what you've really seen over the last couple of games is a dedication by Paul to start driving to the hoop a little bit more and start getting contact and forcing them into a little bit worse positions in terms of getting free throws. And I think he's averaging 7.5 free throws per game in this postseason alone, much higher than what we've seen over the last few years.
Yep. How about points, rebounds, and assists tonight? in the 76ers-Hawks game, and you have Joel Embiid's number is 49.5. Jesus.
I mean, they really, he's what, he's like 3 of 21 in the second half of each of the last two games, so he's clearly getting gassed out.
No kidding. I would lean under, although Doug made the case, obviously, and he likes the over 12.5 rebounds. And he, I mean, if he doesn't get banged up, he stays in the game. He can drop 30 without even, it's a very easy matchup for him to score points.
I mean, I think you're going to see him out there, right? How effective he's going to be. So, like, you'll get the opportunities, right? They will be out there. The minutes will be there for Joel Embiid. I think the rebounds is a smart play because he has been massive in terms of the way he's been attacking the glass.
How about this? So let's say he goes for 30 and 15. Yeah. Is he going to have 5 assists? To go over 49.5 points, rebounds, and assists?
I mean, they do run a lot of post stuff and, like, off-ball stuff so he can find open shooters, especially when he's doubled. He can do it.
You get that, yeah. It's a big number, though.
Yes.
Like, to get to 50 is a big number. Okay, so you have a breakdown on what the key has been to the series. The last three games, anyway, to the Clippers and the Jazz. JVT will share that with all of us coming up next. Today from the OddsTrader.com studio here at Circa Resort and Casino, OddsTrader.com. Download the free OddsTrader app right now. Start winning with up-to-the-second info that you need. Mitch Moss with JVT filling in for Paulie today. Okay, so you think you've unlocked the code to this Clippers-Jazz series, but you did admit, like this hour, that you're super high on the Clippers anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, what did you find here? Why have the Clippers gotten back into the series? Why do they lead 3-2? And can we exploit this like betting?
Yeah, I think you can. Like, I think the market has been a little slow on the fact that the Clippers have found something in the two games in LA, and they carried that over into Utah. And so we have some numbers, and this is predicated on knowing what the Jazz are. And the Jazz are a really good three-point shooting team. They finished third in three-point shooting as a team. I think it was 39%. Most transition attempts, all of these things are very good. But when you hear three-point shooting, I think a lot of people don't realize that their three-point shooting is driven off of driving kick opportunities, right? This is what the Utah Jazz do. They get into the painted area, they get you into rotations, and then they move, I think they call it the blender, where they just get you moving around in rotation until they find a guy that's an open three-point shooter, and then they drill it, right? So opportunities inside the paint are really important. So let's look at the first two games of this series. The first two games, which of course the Jazz won, they averaged 34.5 attempts within 14 feet. So the painted area of the floor and in. 34.5 attempts within 14 feet of the basket. They shot 53.6% on those attempts. So the first two games that they won, they were really solid in doing that. Getting into the paint, kicking it out to open shooters, and even when you got into the paint, they were successful in shooting. But then look at games 3-5. And the Clippers, you saw the adjustment. Go small, switch them all, and then, of course, play a little zone in there as well. The attempts within 14 feet, Mitch, go from 34.5 per game in games 1 and 2 to 28.3. And look at the drop-off in the shooting, from 53.6% to 49.4. And while initially you might think, well, 53.6, 49.4, those are relatively good. Remember, these are shots within 4 feet of the basket, 5 feet of the basket. A good shooting percentage at the rim is over 60%, right? So factoring all of this in, the shooting has dropped off in a big way, and the attempts have dropped off in a big way for the Utah Jazz. So the Clippers, and this was my argument the whole time going into that last game when the market was overreacting to the absence of Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's massively important, but the edge that you found was schematic and personnel driven, where you could replicate a lot of that in that game. And sure enough, what do we see in game 5? 26 attempts inside the arc for the Utah Jazz. 8 of those were Rudy Gobert on offensive rebounds and putbacks, right? So like they're not getting anything in terms of those drive and kick opportunities. And on the inverse of this, the Los Angeles Clippers have gone small. They've taken Rudy Gobert out of the painted area of the floor, and they're now allowed to attack the basket a lot more. And so if you look games 1-2, well, the attempts within 14 feet are down. Games 1-2 for the Clippers, they attempted 39.5 attempts per game within 14 feet. They shot 53.2%. The efficiency has skyrocketed since they've committed to the small ball lineup. Games 3 and 5, or 3 through 5, 33.3 attempts within 14 feet, so about 6 fewer, but the shooting has gone up to 58% on those attempts for the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, this has been, and it's funny because we bury Ty Lue all the time because of his coaching. And he has made some massive mistakes in this series, and he made them in the Dallas series. But the fact that he is committed to this, that he has benched Rajon Rondo, this has made all the difference in the world. And I think out of all these coaches that we need to give a little like a flack for, Quinn Snyder has made zero adjustments in this series whatsoever. There's no off-ball movement. There's no off-ball screens to kind of counteract all of this to get the zone defense moving. It is still trying to rely on this drive and kick stuff, and it works in the regular season. But against this team, who a small ball lineup, the smallest guy on the floor is 6'5" and Reggie Jackson, you're having some trouble here, and I think it showed in the last three games. This is a schematic advantage that has worked for the Clippers, and that's why they've won three straight.
So does that play into what Doug was telling us, prop bet guy, 15 minutes ago, where he actually thinks the number for Paul George tonight is a little bit light?
Yeah.
Spread the Jazz out. He's gonna it's going to be point guard Paul George tonight, right, again, in theory. And then he's going to be able to maybe Gobert's moved away from the basket a little bit, and George can get his way into the lane. Mm-hmm. Maybe not to the rack, because Gobert is such a good rim protector anyway, but maybe he turns into like a floating machine tonight, or he's drawing a lot of contact once he has defenders, you know, collapse on him once he gets to the rack.
Yep.
Is that something that could be taken away from this? And you could say Paul George is going to go for 35 because the Jazz have not adjusted so far?
I would say so. And like, look at the free throw attempts, right? Even the last two games for Paul George, 11 and 10, and he's shooting 90% from the free throw line. Like, he's going to get the opportunity. He's going to get fouls drawn. The ball's going to be in his hand, so his usage is going to be great. And his three-point shooting has really picked up. Like, all of those opportunities are going to be there for Paul George. It's going to be, the big thing here, and that's why I've been kind of like Mike Conley, he's going to help. But Mike Conley's not going to help if you're not going to adjust in terms of some of your stuff off the ball. If you're just so reliant on this driving kick game that the Jazz have been relying on.
Am I wrong by reacting, by saying this? It's still Paul George.
I think it's a little unfair. I mean, he's been really good in this postseason.
And for three consecutive games, he's
been incredible.
Yeah.
But I understand it. I will say that.
I'm saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek. Up next, there is currently nothing on the planet as strong as this betting angle. I'll explain that coming up next. Exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boosts, and the largest offer of live in-play options. BetRivers Sportsbook is the industry leader when it comes to online sports betting. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers the most live streams of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time play through BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. The offer is valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. It's also available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. You must be 21. So I'm somewhat joking here, JVT, by calling this the best betting angle in sports right now that exists on this planet. Charles Barkley is now 1-11 in his last 12 guarantees. The only one he got right was when the Suns, he had the Suns to win the last two games versus the Lakers after AD went down.
Okay.
But he's 1-11. StatMuse is a good follow on Twitter. They've been tracking this. And it's like 4-15 or 4-16 going back. So he had a couple of other winners in there, but it's just, it's amazing. And I, you know what? I'm actually very disappointed when games are not on TNT.
Yeah.
The drop off from their studio show and their coverage to the other network, man, oh man, it's night and day.
I would agree with that.
And Barkley, he said this the other day, he's going to be 60 years old, right? Like, if he were to ever leave TNT, I just hope he retires. I don't want him to go anywhere else because it won't work.
Yeah. No, the dynamic's great. And, you know, so there's this whole conversation. I'm glad you brought that up. Like, do you think, because there's a lot of times where they get caught with their pants down in terms of the actual analysis, should they be better in certain instances? Like, I don't mind about the 1-11 thing because, you know, that's a bit, and we're all going to be wrong at times. It's impressive to me.
I think, that's the thing. Like, I want his guarantee, like, every single night.
Yeah.
To see what it's like. And they, by the way, it's like an entertainment outlet, right? It's supposed to be entertaining, and it is. Mission accomplished. It's the best studio show I've ever watched in my entire life.
Like when they're falling asleep at halftime of games that they should be covering?
Yeah.
Like things like that? Those are the things where I kind of like, oh, well, maybe you can, should be a little bit better,
of
but
course,
at the same time,
right.
Like they're so good at what they do that I would agree with most part. Like there's no studio show like it that I'll put it this way. For live sporting events that I'm interested in, I'm tuning in at tip-off, kickoff, whatever it is. If I got time, I'll tune into this broadcast for sure.
Yeah, it's not every night. It used to be every night for me when I had more time available and stuff, but it's not every night. But when I do catch it, it's entertaining. And, you know, they here's the great thing about it. Like, they have really thick skin.
Well, Shaq's a little thin. Well, every time it's championships.
Yeah. But they're...
You're right.
They're totally okay with really piling on Charles.
Yes.
And he takes it like a champ, in my opinion. Not a lot of people, like in media, in sports betting, whatever, have thick skin.
What was the line the other day? Y'all got on my ass, and Kenny was, well, yeah, we can all fit.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's fun. But, yeah, 1-11 in his guarantees, and it's like, you know, he had the Sixers the other night, and they're up, you know, 24. They blow that lead. He had the Bucks before game six? No, game five. I'm sorry, game five.
Guaranteed it?
Guaranteed it, and also they're going to win the championship. Within 2 seconds, he said they're so stupid.
He said that was the game where at halftime, he guaranteed they would win the championship. He said they could win the championship. Yep. But then after, it was like, you could see at halftime they were losing this game.
Yeah. Yep.
It's so good.
This is a good tweet from Las Vegas locally. Vegas isn't back until random acquaintances you haven't talked to in 7 years begin calling to let you know they're going to be in town next week. If you've ever lived in Las Vegas, anybody who's ever lived here can relate to this.
Yep.
If you don't, I'll explain. When it rains, it pours here in Las Vegas, meaning that once you have like somebody you haven't talked to in a couple of years reach out and say, hey, it's been a while. How are things? I'm going to be in Vegas. Let's hang out over the weekend, right? Once that happens, the floodgates open up, and it'll be like five people you haven't talked to with different groups in like a two-month stretch. Hey, I'm coming to Vegas in April. Another group, I'm going to be in Vegas late April. I'll be there in early May. It's like, I haven't talked to you in 3 years. Now I got to go hang out until 5 o'clock in the morning. Get the hell out of here with this.
So you have a different experience because I'm from here. So everybody that I know is either here or they're out of town and they'll come in every once in a while.
Yeah.
But having said that, I did over the last 3 weeks already have two people who used to live here and moved away already come back. But hey, I'm in town. Let's go.
Yep.
It is now that it's opening back up. I mean, you can party in other towns, but there's nothing quite like it.
Well, but here's the thing, though, too. And it was fun like in my 20s, early 30s, whatever. But it's like people who come here, they don't. It's not real life to them.
Right.
I'm going to go to Vegas for 4 days. I'm going to probably lose a ton of money. I'm going to get absolutely wrecked. And I expect you to be there for every single second along the way. And I'm like, I've done it. I can't do this anymore. I'll come and see you one night. We'll hang out. Is that okay?
Right. The worst is I've got a buddy who lives in New York, and he'll just pop in like the day before.
The old pop in.
Yeah, the pop in. Hey, man, we're going out tomorrow night. I'm like, well, I've got a job and a child. I'd like more than a 24-hour notice on what's happening here.
Sure.
But sure, let me drop everything. This old reference. So we can go to Hakkasan, you know?
No. But it doesn't matter, by the way. Right. They could be in on a Wednesday through a Saturday type of deal, and they are going to expect you, wait a second, you can't come out on a Wednesday and Thursday night?
Come on,
what the hell's wrong with you?
Right.
Oh, really? Have you given it 2 seconds of thought at all to consider that I actually live here and we do work and we get up at certain times of the day?
Right.
Yeah, sure.
You know what you're putting me through? I will say it's kind of like this, too. Vegas isn't back until the random acquaintance you haven't met and hits you up. Or Vegas isn't back until you see the random stranger passed out in front of the slot machine.
Oh, yeah.
That's always a classic.
Absolutely. And this tweet is so good. This is from someone named Lee Sanderlin. And he sent out a photo of it as well. He's at a Waffle House.
Oh, yeah.
This is yesterday. And as he pointed out, he pulled a Brent Musburger. I'm coming to you live from a Brandon, Mississippi Waffle House. I, a total loser, came in last place in my fantasy football league. As punishment, I spend 24 hours in a Waffle House. Every waffle I eat shaves an hour off the clock. It's 4:07 Central. How many waffles could you eat?
I like to think, come on, look at me. I like to think I could put down like 5?
If you spread them out?
Well, if you spread them, like, I'm talking about one sitting.
Yeah,
I feel
one
like
sitting.
If you spread them out over the course of you're there for 24 hours, I think you could probably fit like 10-ish.
Yeah, and then by the time you get to 10, though, like you only have probably, you're probably already 16 hours into this whole ordeal.
Yeah.
So if you eat a waffle, like he sits down, he eats one waffle. That means he has 23 hours to go. In a half an hour, maybe he eats another one, so he's down to 22 hours, right?
You see the update on it?
No, I did not.
He's done.
He finished it? How many you whacked down?
9 waffles, 15 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for him. I would tell you this, and I've known about this punishment kind of stuff for a long, long time. I must have just people who are so weak and they're so afraid. The idea of playing in a fantasy league with the people that I currently play with would give this zero thought.
Oh, yeah.
They would say, are you out of your minds? I'm never going to do any punishment like this. I play in boring fantasy leagues, which sucks because every time a trade offer is made, they take 11 days to get back to you and everything is turned down.
Yep.
I hate those kind of fantasy leagues.
I would love to be in a league like this.
So
think about the motivation.
This would be so much fun.
Yep.
That's how you do it. That's how you play fantasy football. Up next, some truly insane numbers on Shohei Ohtani. And again, if he finishes out the season, good luck beating him. Join the action on DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Download the app. Use the promo code VSIN when you sign up to compete for cash prizes each and every week. Don't wait. Sign up now. And new customers get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's code VSIN when you sign up. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in Indiana, that's 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Must be 18 years or older. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com. for details. JVT is sitting in with me today here on a Friday morning, live at Circa Resort and Casino. You're an Angels guy. Do you have any bets on Ohtani to win the MVP?
I do not. No. I was not handicapping anything at the time, so I sat back and watched the market evolve, and I can totally understand it. If he was going to be healthy, he's got the capability to put up the numbers, and the numbers he's putting up from a pitching and hitting perspective, again yesterday, lowering the ERA, it's insane. What he's been able to do, man.
Well, some of these numbers now, I mean, pitching and hitting, this is really incredible. So, comparing him to Babe Ruth, and here you go with, like, the plate appearances at this point, right? This is through 68 games. So, he has 254 plate appearances. Babe Ruth has 244. Batting average, Ohtani 271, Babe Ruth 323, much higher. But home runs, Ohtani 19-10, and his slugging is 618 to Babe Ruth 611. So, I mean, not only comparable, but oftentimes much better offensively than the numbers Babe Ruth put up.
Yep.
Okay? Now, when you flip it and you go to the pitching numbers as well for Ohtani, so far, compare him to Babe Ruth. This is through 68 games. Again, 9 starts compared to Ruth. ERA 2.85 to 3.47. Innings 47-83. Look at this, folks.
Yep.
Babe Ruth had a K to walk rate of 14-42. Ohtani is 68-28. My God, I never want to get duped by Babe Ruth was a great pitcher ever again. Look at that K to walk rate.
It was a different game back then, Mitch.
Yeah, today, take a seat, Babe. You're going to go to AAA with those numbers. I never realized that before. The K to walk rate was that bad.
That was one of the things that stuck out to me when I saw this. Like people will swear up and down, like this is a, but you know, the Babe, he could play. No, yeah. I don't think he could pitch. I don't think he could pitch at least in this era.
He's walking the ballpark. It's 42 walks and 83 innings. Ohtani's pitching numbers blow Babe Ruth out of the water.
Yep.
And all of this, you know, Babe Ruth, amazing back 100 years ago. Really? Okay. Well, Ohtani's better. At least, you know, this year anyway. The numbers from both sides, absolutely remarkable. And I have him on a 30-1 ticket, I think 750 and 6-1. I also did take Guerrero right before he got super hot at 15-1. So right now, those two players are the runaway shortest shots on the board. And it depends on where you look with Ohtani. In fact, I did see Vladimir take over as the favorite in a couple of books this week.
Yep.
I think that may be flipped again since last night.
Well, Ohtani was great again yesterday. So against the Tigers, 6 innings, 5 hits. The only blemish was a slider he left over the plate. It was a solo shot to Shoup. And then outside of that, great, struck out 5. He's absolutely incredible, man. The velocity is back. Remember, he had that scare, what, 3 or 4 starts ago, where the velocity had dipped like 4 or 5 miles an hour.
Yep.
The velocity is pretty much back at this point. It's like, and there's so much more about him outside of the pitching. You had a great play last night where he gives up a dribbler up the line. He sprints to go and grab it. He fields it, you know. He grabs it, and it's funny because he grabs it and almost makes a pump fake and realizes, oh, wait, no, I've got to make this play. Still gets the guy out at first. Like, what he's able to do is insane if you watch him on a night-to-night basis in terms of pitching, defense, hitting, on the base paths as well. Like, he's a phenom, dude. It's incredible to watch him every single
night. It really is. And so, I mean, and I've been saying this all the way back to, like, probably early May when I was telling people, if you can find Ohtani in a good number, 7, 6 to 1, whatever it is, you got to go in again because it's, again, I always explain to people, it doesn't matter what you think. Like right now, you could be telling yourself that Vladimir Guerrero should absolutely be the MVP and he might win the Triple Crown, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get inside the minds of the voters. Like I'll give you, here's another example. I bet Anthony Edwards to win the Rookie of the Year once LaMelo went down and he was injured. At 18 to 1. Good number. I'm going to take my chance at that point. LaMelo could be out for the rest of the year. At that point, I just figured that Edwards had a chance, if he finished strong, to actually win the award. And I never had a ticket on LaMelo at all. And then you find out that the voting came in, and 84 of the votes out of the 99 first place votes went to LaMelo Ball. I mean, maybe LaMelo Ball should have been the Rookie of the Year, and I lose that ticket. That's fine. 84 to 15 is a joke to me.
Really?
So I did a poor job. Right, getting inside the voters' minds of that one. But I had the Thibodeau thing absolutely locked and loaded from many, many months ago. And with this, when guys in baseball who cover the sport, who probably have votes, are telling you, like, they've never seen anything like this before, or you have to go back to Babe Ruth, like, you can read the tea leaves, right? You kind of can get a direction of where they're going to go with their vote at the end of the year.
Right. Well, and in the sneaky part about this, too, is with Ohtani's case, because I think one of the slights is, well, they're going to finish below 500. They're not going to be a very good team. How does that affect the voting? They've been quietly chugging along really well here,
yeah,
taking care of a soft part of the schedule, right? They get swept by Oakland, but outside of that, they sweep Kansas City. They had another sweep in there that I'm forgetting. They back-to-back sweeps in that regard. Now they get Detroit, who they just beat yesterday. They have another game here today in which they'll be favored. And if they can continue to beat up on these bad teams, they're hovering right around 500. Trout comes back. Ohtani continues to do what they do, and then they make a push for a wild card. Like, there's still that realm where they're competing for a playoff spot, and he still wins this over Vlad, who, and by the way, Toronto Blue Jays, look, they're in the same exact boat. They're 33-34.
Yep.
So, like, that's the other part about this is, if you're breaking down the AL MVP race, the guy who is up there with him is also on a similar team in terms of the competition and where they're going to be at in the pecking order
Correct.
Of things. So you can't really use it as a massive slight against him.
We could actually be living in a year where guy's going to win a Triple Crown. He's, like, universally loved. I mean, Vladimir Guerrero was a very likable, right?
Yep.
Baseball player, and yet Ohtani could just, like, absolutely destroy him with the votes and win the MVP.
Yep.
And, by the way, we could have two, potentially here, a lot of baseball left, obviously, but we could be living in a year where two pitchers win the MVP.
Right.
That would be absolutely bonkers, and I could probably say that's never going to happen again.
Both who are effective as a hitter as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, DeGrom not to the same level as Ohtani,
sure.
But still, like, both effective hitters at the plate.
Are the Angels going to get this right?
Oh, the big picture stuff?
Yeah, I mean, like, beyond this year, Trout obviously injury-prone at this point, missing a lot of time in 2021. But let's assume that he comes back and he stays healthy for all of next year, maybe the year after that, and you have Ohtani now, who clearly is in his prime. We're talking about the two best players in baseball here,
mm-hmm.
right?
You are.
Right at the very top of the list, and yet they disappoint, like, every single season.
Yep, and a lot of it, the troubling part of it is, it is clearly because of the decisions made by the front office.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Consistently buying low on guys, trying to get more out of them. The Jose Quintana experiment failed, you know, miserably coming into this kind of a season. Right? You go back to last year, the year before with Matt Harvey. You know, everything that they have tried to do has been try to buy on the cheap and try to buy low on guys with this pitching staff. The pitching staff has consistently been a weak link for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, if you're the Angels, and they have a lot of expiring contracts on this team, right? I think it's a total ballpark of like 10 guys that are only going to be under contract next year. Like, this is one where you could come into next year and you need to spend money on pitching. You need to go get the top tier guys that are going to be in this class. Go get yourself an ace and build from there, because there are some sneaky good young pieces. Heaney's a solid guy. They got the young reliever, Chris Rodriguez, who's been awesome. Like, they have a little things that they can work with, but you got to spend money on the pitching staff. No more of this buy low crap, man.
You know, it's a type of team that if they would make a wild card appearance, would you go Ohtani in that game?
I think you have
to. You have to throw him?
You have to. He's got a 270 ERA now after last night. The next closest guy is, I think, hovering around four.
Like, yeah.
You can't.
I think it's probably a no-brainer, right, where you don't even hesitate. You got to set it up. Unless, of course, he has to pitch like on the final day of the season.
If it's a must-win.
A must-win type of deal. But if Ohtani would be set up to go in a playoff game, and then the winner advances, a wild card game, mm-hmm. and then Trout is back, obviously, at this point, this is the type of team that could have, you know, a disappointing regular season, but if they made the playoffs, very difficult out, potentially.
Right. And I got to pull this out because they're still a top 10 team from a lineup perspective in a lot of offensive categories, right? Like weighted runs created plus, like all of these things that you look at for a solid team. They're eighth right now in WRC plus. Like, there's a lot of good things about this team, right? The offense has been really solid for this club.
Uh-huh.
So it's just about, and like, that's the other part about why this is so important, I think, at least in terms of what they've been able to do by kind of treading water, is do the Angels finally wake up? They don't have much in terms of pieces you could trade. But you go get an arm for you, right? If you're still hovering around 500, what, four games back of the wild card?
Make a run
if Trout's going to come back.
When's the last time they had a true ace? I'm not going to count Ohtani this year.
Jared Weaver. You know, you and I were talking about this out there. They traded for Zach Greinke that one year, the half year, right? They had him for half a season. But outside of that, like, they tried, and it goes back so far. Remember, they went faux Texas. Remember, they went and got C.J. Wilson. They tried to get him
right.
and make him into one of their aces. Right? They have gone this route for such a long time in terms of trying to acquire a guy on the tail end, trying to buy low to make him their ace. It just has not worked out.
Yeah, and
Weaver's been the last guy. Garrett Richards, actually probably unfair.
Yeah.
Richards was really good, too.
I don't injury
know if you
prone.
Want to, yeah, but I don't know if you want to call him an ace, but Richards was probably their last top-end guy.
Man, good, but again,
right.
The injury history there, and I can't really qualify him as a true ace overall, but some of the other signings too, like the Rendon thing so far hasn't worked out.
Mm-hmm.
He's too good of a player. How does this happen?
Yeah.
He was the nuts in Washington. And then, you know, go back beyond that. I mean, the Hamilton thing, clearly a disaster. Pujols, I mean, that much money for that long of a stretch never worked out, right? I mean, it's just, they've tried, they spent money with like offense and stuff, but it's been a disaster more than anything else, really.
Yep.
It's unfortunate.
It's the little things, man. You got to go out like I was of the mindset, like these last two, whether it was Bauer, and I don't know, obviously, the intricacies of the negotiations. But to get Richard Trevor Bauer on the market, I walk in and I go, what do you want? I will give it to you.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we need you. Come on. And they haven't.
Yep. And Ohtani again last night, very awesome. Strong on the mound.
Yep.
So good. So much fun to watch as well. Could you imagine, like, if you're a young kid in that area, how much you would love Shohei Ohtani?
Hell yeah.
Oh, if I'm 10, 12 years old.
So I'm 30 and I love Shohei.
I'd be completely I'd be obsessed with Tatis as well, though.
Right.
You know, I mean, if I'm 10, 12 years old, he'd be like my hero. Bruce Marshall on Euros 20 coming up in about 10 minutes. And up next, one big sigh of relief for all of us. I'll explain coming up.